We're holding on Membeis Amud Beis, the last line. The Mishnah had said that the Kohen Mashuach Melchama says to the soldiers after he tells them that they shouldn't be afraid of the psychological warfare and realize that the Goyim are coming thinking they're going to win because of their heroes, and we're coming knowing we're going to win because of Hashem. And he says, Va'atim i'atim kein chula. He says, you're not like that because Hashem is going with you, as the Pasuk actually says, Ki Hashem alekechem ha'olich imach. So the Gemara asks, V'chol kach lama, why so much? In other words, why is he saying that Hashem is going with you? Why is he using the word ha'olich rather than just saying Hashem is with you? Ha'olich implies that there's something actually walking with them. So what is that? So the answer is Mepnei Hashem b'chok pinuyav munochin ba'orin, because Hashem's name and all of the, so to speak, nicknames of it, meaning the Shem Havaya is Hashem's essential name, and then you have the various other names by which we call Hashem, which are called to a certain extent kinuyim. So all of those are placed in the Aron. So therefore, literally, Hashem is going with them in the sense that Hashem and his name, Hashem Achadush Mayachad. So therefore, so you have that. Here's where Tosfos mentions the point about what we touched on yesterday about whether there's one Aron or two Aronis. The idea being that there were two. The idea being that there were two Aronis. One containing the whole luchas and one containing the broken ones, or some say that there was only one. What do we mean by Hashem v'chol kinuyav? So there's a few different explanations. Maharsha says it means, I mean, you have in there the luchas, and the luchas contain, besides Shem Havaya, they also contain two other names of Hashem, Elikim and Kael. The Rabbeinu Gershom in Baba Basra, the Gemara is also in Baba Basra, says that means that they Pashut wrote down all of the names of, let's say, there's the famous thing, you have three psukim in Parshas Beshalach back to back that have 72 letters each, and we derive from them 72 three-letter names of Hashem. So all of those were written in the Aron, and you have various other different explanations. The point is, therefore, the Kohen can literally say to them that Hashem is going with you. And we find a similar kind of thing to show that the Aron went with them to battle. The Pasuk says, by the war with Midian in Parshas Matos, Moshe sent 1,000 from each Shevet to the war, to the army. Oysam, he sent them, Pinchas, and he sent Pinchas. So what the word oysam seems extra. So oysam ze elu Sanhedrin. The word oysam means that besides for the soldiers, the 12,000 soldiers, one from each Shevet, it also means that he sent along the Sanhedrin with them. They're called Osam in the sense, like they're equal in importance to all the rest of the Jewish people. At Pinchas Zem Mashuach Mochama, when it says that Pinchas went along, that means he was the Mashuach Mochama by that battle. He was at that point, his father Elazar was the Kohen Gadol, so Pinchas was the Mashuach Mochama. The pasuk continues and it mentions other things that went along as well. So the whole pasuk goes, Vayushlach Oysam Moshe Elof Lamat Latzava, Oysam Ves Pinchas Ben Elazar HaKohen Latzava, Uchlei HaKodesh, and the holy objects, Vachatzotra Satrua, and the trumpets for blowing, the Yodai were in his hands. So the Gemara is darshan, and now the rest of the pasuk. Uchlei HaKodesh, Zeh Oren V'Luchas Shabai, the word Klei HaKodesh refers to the Oren containing the Luchas. So we see that went along with them also. And the word v'chatzotzer satrua refers to they took along shofaris to blow, as the pasuk says that when you're at war or you have other kinds of trouble, then you blow shofar, or actually the psukim mentioned you blow chatzotzeris, you blow trumpets to arouse Hashem's attention, so to speak, and then that we should get victory. Actually, Maharsha wonders, what do you mean? So why are we saying shofaris? At that point, they had the chatzotzeris, the silver trumpets that were made in Parshas Bahaloscha. So there's different explanations. Tosfos explains elsewhere that there were ones that the Kohenim blew the silver ones, and the Levium blew chatzotzeris made from animals' horns. And there's various other explanations, including that there's a difference between inside Eretz Yisrael and outside it. So the Pasuk, after all, says, in your land, and this wasn't Ba'artzachem, and there's different various other explanations. Tosfos, by the way, brings from Tosefta that another possibility of Klei HaKodesh refers to the Big Day Kohana. Anyway, the point is we see that the Aron went along with them. So now, why is Pinchas going? So Tana, we learn it up now. So the first, the Braisa that we just quoted said he went because it was the Mashiach Muhammad. But now this next Braisa that Masha points out is going to disagree with that and say that he's not going as the Mashiach Muhammad, rather he's going as the general. So then why particularly him? So Tana, we learn in a Braisa. Loy l'chinam holach Pinchas the Muhammad wasn't for nothing that Pinchas went to this war. Eloli pora din avi imai. He went in order to take take revenge on behalf of what was done to his ancestor Yosef, where the Midyanim were the ones who sold Yosef to Mitzrayim. So now, therefore, Hashem arranged that he would be the one who now goes to fight back against them. The Maharal points out, we're not literally talking about revenge, and it's 400 years later. What we mean is, in other words, that Yosef is the symbol of the ultimate Kedusha, because we had before that he's the one, he held himself back in the matter of Potiphar's wife, whereas the Midyanim over here are the symbol of the ultimate and the opposite, because we see the whole reason why they're fighting against them is because they had their daughters go to try and entice the Jewish people. So therefore, they're polar opposites. And Pinchas, who's a worthy descendant of Yosef in that regard, because he's the one who killed Zimri when Zimri was involved with the Midianists, and therefore it's only fitting that he should be the one to go and wreak vengeance on the Midianim, the polar opposites of Yosef. As it says, the Midianim, which is another name for the Midianim, sold Yosef to Mitzrayim, etc. So the Gemara asked the member of the Pinchas from Yosef, Asi. So you're telling me that Pinchas descends from Yosef? Now we know, of course, his father was a Lazar, who was a Kohen. So obviously, on his father's side, he's not descended from Yosef. But the pasuk says that a Lazar ben Aaron lokachlamim nois Putiel loyla isha, that a Lazar married one of the daughters of Putiel as a wife, and then Pinchas was their son. So who is Putiel? My love to Osi mi Yisrael. Doesn't that mean, isn't Putiel another name for Yisrael? And he's called that Shepitim Agolim Lavaris Lechavim, because before he became a ger, he fattened calves in honor of Avodah Zarah to bring them as korbanos. So therefore, so where is Pinchas descended from Yosef? And the answer is like, no, the word Putiel actually means Yosef. Mi Yosef Shepit bit be Yisrael. It means from Yosef, who treated his Yetzirah contemptuously. Pitbit Rashi means as in zilzel, like he treated it like something light, he suppressed it and didn't consider it important. So therefore he can be called Putiel in token of that he successfully withstood the test with Potiphar's wife. So yes, then in that case, Pinchas' mother would be from descended from Yosef. The question is, we can't say that because we know that after he killed Zimri, the other Shvatim were making fun of Pinchas. And they were saying, Re'isim ben Puti zeh, have you seen the son of Puti, ben Shepitim avi imay agolam laberes b'chavim, this son whose mother's father used to fatten calves for Avodah Zarah, Yarev Nasi Yisrael, and he should be the one who kills a Nasi from the Jewish people. And therefore Hashem goes and reiterates in the Torah that no, he's Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen, he gets that quality from Aaron, who was Oyev Shalom, Verodev Shalom, etc. So in Baba Basra, the Gemara tells more details about it. But the point is, they wouldn't have been saying that if he hadn't actually been descended from Yisrael. So still, where are you getting that he's descended from Yosef? There's a sicha, by the way, where they never talked about why they're dafka mentioning that point of all the things that Yisrael did. Why they're focusing on that is because they're saying that, you see, there's a streak of cruelty in the family. You see that Yisrael is fattening up the calves only for the purpose of then going and killing them. And the same way Pinchas seems to be the same kind of cruel person killing a Nasi. And Hashem says, no, he did it out of mercy and love for the Jewish people to stop the plague that was spreading. Anyway, so where do you get Yosef? So the answer is Ella. No, we have to answer I avud imei mi Yosef, imei de imei mi Yisrael. The answer is you have to go back one generation. If we don't know which was which, but either his mother's father was from Yosef and his mother's mother was descended from Yisrael. And then, in other words, so what we mean is actually one generation further back. What we mean is actually when we say avur de ime and ime de ime, we really mean a generation further back. The mother of his paternal grandmother or his maternal grandmother. So his great grandmothers, respectively. So either one was, so one was from Yosef and the other from Yisrael. The image imemi Yosef, image of avur de imemi Yisrael. Or you can have the mother of his, that the mother of his mother, that Pinchas's grandmother was from Yosef, and avur de imemi Yisrael, and her and the father was from Yisrael. So the point is, either way, one way or the other, he is descended from both of them. In fact, so therefore, when it says that Elazar married Mimnois Putiel, it means that he married a woman who is descended from both of them, from both Yosef and Yisrael. And the Gemara says, Dekanami. In fact, you can see that in the words of the Pasuk, Tichtiv Mimnois Putiel, where it says from the daughters of Putiel, whereas if it just meant that it means only Yisrael or only Yosef, then instead it would have said Putiel, Rashi says. Putiel suggests a double pay test. So tre mashma, so it's mashma, both meanings of pay test that we said before, pitim for Yisrael and pitpeit for Yosef. So shmamina, so that proves that in fact Yosef, that in fact Elazar's wife, Pinchas's mother, is descended from both of them, and therefore it is correct to say that Pinchas is descended from Yosef, and now he's coming to fight against Midian for that reason. This Gemara is also in Baba Basra, and Ashbam over there explains a different point, that it says Mibnois from the daughters, so therefore it means, in other words, that she was a daughter of multiple families. Okay. Now let's go on. So the previous Mishnah told us about the speech that the Kohen Mashuach Melchama gives to the people, encouraging them to tell them to not be afraid and to trust in Hashem, etc. Now we have the following Psukim in Parashas Shoftim describe how you have the various people who are exempt from going to war, or not from going to war, but from fighting in the war, as we're going to go on to say. So now the Mishnah is going to deal with that point. The pasuk continues, the dibru ashoitrim al omlaimer, the shoitrim, the officers speak to the people, and they say, as miha isha shabona bayis chodesh v'lo chanochai, who is the man, which person has built a new house and has not yet been mechanechit, where mechanech would be basically hasn't started living in it yet or collecting rent or whatever it is. Anyway, so yelech v'yoshev l'veisev, he should go home. So let's talk about the details of that. It doesn't just mean that he built a new house. Echad abona beis ha-teven. First of all, it doesn't have to be that he actually built a house that's meant for living in. Also, if he built a house where he's going to store straw, beis ha-bakar, or building a stable for his cattle, beis ha-etzim, or a building where he stores wood, beis ha-otzris, or where he stores other kinds of storage, as Rashi gives an example, wine or oil or grain or whatever. All of those are considered a house in halacha, because conceivably you could live in each one of them. Echad aboyne, and also it doesn't matter whether the guy built it himself, the echad alakeach, or whether he bought it, so it's new to him, the echad ayodesh, or whether he yashined it from somebody else. Or if it was given to him as a gift, either way, it's considered a bayis chadash, and he gets to go home from the war because of it. Then the next pasuk continues. This is the shoytrim continue when they announce. So, mi eisha shenata kerem v'lechil lo v'gomer, which person has planted a vineyard and has not been mechalal it yet. So, you have a vineyard for the or fruit trees, as we're going to go on to say, for the first 3 years, they're orla. And then in the fourth year, they're neter avai, where the produce has kedusha like ma'aser sheni, and you have to either take it to your shalayim and eat it, or you have to exchange it for money and bring the money to your shalayim. That kind of procedure, exchanging it for money, is called chilul. So in this case, he hadn't yet had the chance to do chilul to exchange the ma'aser sheni money, to exchange the ma'aser sheni produce for money and be able to bring that to Yerushalayim. He hasn't had the opportunity to do that yet. And Mephoshim differ on the exact details. Are we talking about that once he had the chance to do that once during the fourth year, then already he's not exempt anymore, or maybe does he get the entire fourth year off? Whatever the case, Anyway, the Mishnah is saying there's more detail to that. Echad anatei kerem. First of all, it's all the same whether he plants a vineyard of vines, the echad anatei chamisha ilonim meichel, or whether he plants five fruit trees. provided, now Rashi is saying, when that's where you have the diagram in Rashi, provided that they're in the configuration that is considered, when it comes to vines, is considered a kerem. In halacha, you have, a person has vines, what makes it that they're considered a vineyard for certain, for the purposes in halacha, including in particular the dinim of kilaya kerem, is the minimum is you have five vines that are arranged in a certain shape. So Rashi here diagrams that shape and says the same thing. If a person planted five fruit trees, five apple trees, let's say, or whatever, also they would have to be in that configuration in order for him to be considered exempt from the battle. Not everybody agrees to that. Some say that din is only as far as kilaya kerem and is not relevant as far as the dinim over here. Anyway, so ve'echon antech hamisha ilonim ma'echol, but only if he plants five fruit. So it has to be five fruit trees. It doesn't have to be vines, as we're going to learn in the Gemara from Pesukim, but nevertheless, it has to be at least five of them. Va'afilu mechamesha saminim, and it would even if there are five different species. So he planted a grapevine and an apple tree and an orange tree, etc., as long as he planted at least five, and he's still during the time before Chiloloi, during the time before the fourth year, then he's potter from the battle. Also, Echad Aniteya, it's all the same whether he plants a new tree, the Echad Amavrich, or whether he layers, which is where you take a branch from a tree and you bend it down into the soil, and eventually it starts growing over there, and eventually it develops roots, and eventually it breaks off the parent tree. So that's also considered planting in Halacha. The Echad Amarkiv, also if he grafts a branch from one tree onto another, and we're going to discuss in the Gemara that with both of those things, you have ways that it's doing it that's osur, and ways that's doing it that's mutter. We're going to have a whole discussion in the Gemara about these dinim as they apply to kilaya kerem and urla and things like that. Anyway, so it's all the same whether he does any of those. All of those are considered planting. The echad of a keach, and it also is the same thing whether he bought a tree, so he didn't plant it himself, but he bought it from somebody else. The echad a yodish, or whether he yashin it. The echad shenitam lematana, or again whether it was given to him as a gift. In all those cases, he gets to go home from the battle. And in all these cases, Rashi mentions on the pasuk that it would be an agmas nefesh. It would be a very disturbing mental thing to him that he did all this work, or in this case, he bought it or whatever, and somebody else is going to end up enjoying the fruit of it, and he's not even going to have the chance to because he falls in battle. So therefore, so there's the idea then that like he's going to be distracted. He's not going to be fully focused on the battle, and you need that every soldier is fully focused. So that's one reason why they get to go home. There's another interesting explanation that's brought. Since you have in the Toichacha, you actually have where it says things like that, Isha Sa'oris, the Ishacha Yishkavena, that one of the curses in the Toichacha and Parshas Kisavai is a person is gonna be Ma'aris, a woman, and then somebody else is gonna end up marrying her because he's gonna end up dying. You'll build a house, but you won't get to live in it, etc. So therefore, you want to make sure that such things don't happen in the army, because then people are gonna panic. They're gonna think that the Toichacha is gonna start coming true. Okay. Anyway, the Mishnah continues. Then the Shoiturim continue. Which man has been Makadish a woman and hasn't yet married her? So the same thing. Echad Ma'aris Zabsula. It doesn't matter whether he was Ma'aris a Bsula, who's never been married yet. The Echad Ma'aris is Almana. It doesn't matter whether she's an Almana. So it's not a new marriage to her, but it is a new marriage for him. Even if she's a shemeres yavam, so she was already, so it's not even, he's not even makadish her, just automatically midaraisa, when his brother dies, then she's up for yibum to him. So therefore, so that exempts him from the army. Even if he hears that his brother died in the battle, then immediately he returns. He's immediately full out from the army, because as soon as his brother dies, then he has a chiyuv of yibum, and therefore that's enough to exempt him, that now it's considered as if he was ma'aris her, and now he hasn't yet married her. So he goes home in order to accomplish yibum. As the Gemara is going to say, that applies even if there's many brothers. So even though only one of them, of course, is going to end up doing yibum with her, but until they do, all of them are exempt. So the Mishnah is, so chozer avalo, even in that case, he turns around and comes back home. So kol elu ve'elu. So all these groups of people that we described in the Mishnah, as far as the new vineyard and the new house and the new wife. So all of them, so Shemin Divrei Koyin Me'erchei Mechama, all of them listen to what the Koyin is saying in the battle, in the ranks of the battle. In other words, the Koyin is giving the speech to them while they're massed in the ranks. Now, we said before at the top of the Mishnah, we said that it's the Shotrim who says, so the Gemara is going to deal with that point. Anyway, V'chozrin, so they return. However, they're not completely exempt. They have to work behind the lines. Or Mesapkin, Mayin Umozin, they're obligated to supply water and food to the soldiers, or Mesapkin, Asadrachim, and to repair the roads. And Mepashtus to do different other kinds of support activities for the army. Okay. The Mishnah continues, Ve'elu she'enan chozrin. Now, on the other hand, the following kinds of cases, the people would not be able to return from the battlefield. They're still chayev to fight. First of all, Habona beis sharach sadro mepeses. If he built not a freestanding building, but a beis shar, which is a gatehouse that you go through it in and out of the chotzer, or an achsadra, which is an entryway for the house. Or a gallery that you walk along it to get to the apartments on the upper floor of a building. So people don't live in those places. So therefore that can't be called bias. There's actually a Gemara in Sukkah that mentions another criteria as well, which is the house has to be at least 4x4 amos. Otherwise, it's also not considered a base dira. Anyway. As far as planting, if he planted only 4 fruit trees, so he said before the minimum is 5, or if he planted 5 or more non-fruit bearing trees, cedar trees or oak trees or actually also says shikma trees. Now it's interesting because a shikma tree does produce a kind of fruit. The fruit is called a shikma. In English, it's called a sycamore. It's like an inferior type of fig. Nonetheless, though, people don't usually plant those for their fruit. They plant them for their beams. So therefore, Rashi is saying that would be included in that they're non-fruit bearing trees. So he doesn't get an exemption from the army because of that. Also, another example would be where he remarries a woman that he had previously divorced. So it's not a new marriage for either one of them. Unlike before, where he marries an almana, therefore he doesn't get an exemption. The Mishnah Melech, in fact, says, what about by the same token? Suppose, for example, that he sold his house and then bought back the same house. Would he also be exempt and he leaves it as tzorichim? Also, his marriage has to be mutter api halacha. So therefore, almana l'kohen gadol. So if it's a kohen gadol and he married an almana, which is osir, or grusha v'chalutza l'kohen hedyet, or is a kohen hedyet and he married a grusha v'chalutza. By the way, I mean, do the kohen gadol or the regular kohenim even go to war? There's a good deal of discussion about that. On the face of it, you have the famous thing that Shevet Levi is reserved for Avodas HaKodesh, and they don't go to war. So there's a few possibilities. One of them being, if they volunteered, maybe they're allowed to go. And another, by the way, we can't say that's talking about Milchemes Mitzvah, because later on, at the end of the parak, we're going to learn that in the case of Milchemes Mitzvah, you don't have these exemptions. All these exemptions are only by Milchemes Rishus, which is an optional war that they're going in order to conquer nations outside Eretz Yisrael in order to increase the prestige of the Jewish people and so forth. We're not talking about a Milchemes Mitzvah where they're actually, for example, fighting against Amalek or the seven nations of Canaan, or a defensive war to protect the Jewish people. There you have different rules. Anyway, so again, one possibility is maybe the Kohen Gadol or the regular Kohen could volunteer to go to the war, or maybe the Mishnah is just, when the Mishnah always when the Mishnah mentions when the Mishnah mentions marriages that are osur, it always mentions this list, so therefore it uses the same list over here, even though maybe some of them are not relevant. Anyway, Mamzeres or Nesina l'Yisrael. Suppose that Yisrael married a Mamzeres or a Nesina, which is Osir, or Bas Yisrael a Mamzer or a Nosin, or a Mamzer or a Nosin married a Bas Yisrael. So all of those, Loi HaYachoyzer, those don't get to return from the battle because their marriage is Osir. Rashi points out, since it says, V'loi l'kocho, he didn't take her, instead of v'loi l'kach, that didn't have to say with the comets and the hay, then that implies that it has to be a marriage which is mutter. So therefore excluding all of these. Rabbi Yehuda says that another example of a person who doesn't get to return from the battle is where he rebuilds his house in exactly the same form. So he tore down his house, Rashi says, and builds it exactly the same size and exactly the same size as he did before. So therefore, it's not a bais chadash. So in other words, Rashi says it's one thing if he built a house. It's one thing if he bought a house or yashin a house or whatever that's still new to him. But here, it's not new to him because it's the exact same house as before. So Rabbi Yehuda says that he still wouldn't loy ha'yechoizer. He doesn't get to return from battle because of that. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, and Rabbi Eliezer says, here's another one, afa bona base levenim bashorin, also a person who builds a house made out of bricks in Shorin. So Shorin is an area of Eretz Yisrael. It's basically the plain running along the coast of Eretz Yisrael, approximately from Tel Aviv to Haifa. As the Gemara is going to explain later, the ground over there is very, you can make bricks out of it just like you can from clay anywhere else, but the clay there that the bricks are made from is really not very good quality. So the bricks don't last very long. They wind up having to rebuild the houses every few years, twice every 7 years is the expression of the Gemara. In fact, you have in Gemara Yuma, it says in Nusach Ashkenaz, they say this in the Avodah of Yom Kippur, that the Kohen Gadol would daven on behalf of the people of Shorin that their houses shouldn't become their graves because their houses are built of such unsuitable materials that sometimes they could collapse. And if the people are in there, then it's going to be very dangerous. So the Kohen Gadol would specifically daven on their behalf on Yom Kippur. But we see, in other words, these are very flimsy type houses. So therefore, Rabbi Eliezer says that kind of thing, loy ha'yachoyzer, then also the person doesn't get to return from the battle because you can't really call that a house if it doesn't last that long. Next, continues the Mishnah. Elu she'ein zozin memkoyim. Now, so far we said again, you have the people who built a house or planted a vineyard or were ma'aris a woman. Then we said that they're able to go home, but they still have to be called up to the army in the first place, and they still have to go and help behind the lines with supplying food and so forth. Now, on the other hand, Elu Shein Zozin Mimkaiman. Now, on the other hand, then you have the following groups don't have to move from their place at all. They don't even get called up to the army. Bonabais Vachanochoi, when he built a house and he was Mechanechet, so he already got to live in it for a little while. So during that first year, he's Potter. Not a kerem b'chilaloi. If he planted a vineyard and he was mechalalit, so again he has. However, the whole fourth year has not passed yet. The whole fourth year has not passed yet. V'anoses arusase, and also where he married his arusa. So now during the first year, during shana yishona, he's potter. And also akoynes es yivimtei, and also where he marries his yivama. So even though there was no kiddushin, but there is yibum, and for the first year he's potter. Shenema, because the pasuk says not. Now this pasuk that the Gemara is going to quote is not in connection with the speech that the Meshuach Mochama and the Shoytim give in Parshas Shoftim. This one is actually in Parshas Kisetze, but still the pasuk says. The Pasuk says over there that he doesn't go out to war, lo yetzer batzava, and the Pasuk says, Noki yir levese shana echos, he'll be clean and exempt for his household for 1 year. So therefore we darshin, levese is zebese. The word levese means if he built a house and lived in it. Yia zekaimo, the fact that it says yia adds also another riboy, so it means also if he planted a vineyard. And when the pasuk continues, the simachas ishtoi, when it says he should make his wife happy, zu ishtoi, so that means his actual wife. So therefore, we see from that pasuk that all these three groups are potter from going to the army. So and asher lokach lahavias yivimtoi, the fact that it says his wife, whom he married, includes the yavama, because otherwise, of course, those words are not necessary in the pasuk. So therefore, all of them are exempt. Ein maspikin lahem mayim umazin, they don't even have to supply water and food to the army. Ve'ein masaknan asadrachim, and they don't have to fix the roads. They're completely exempt, and they have that first year to enjoy their house, or enjoy their vineyard, or enjoy their new wife. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Tonan abon. When it says v'dibru hashoytrim, the pasuk says that the shoytrim speak, and they say these announcements that whoever did one of these three things goes home. So yachol dvarim shal atzman. So you would think that that means that they speak on their own. That nobody prompted them to say that. They just start announcing it themselves. You have a few psukim later after it mentions the three groups. Then it says v'yosfu ashoturim that the shoturim add, and they mention the point that anybody who's fearful should go home. So therefore, haray dvarim shal atzman amar. So therefore, that implies over there that they're saying something that wasn't previously said. So v'yosfu means, in other words, that they're saying something that they're adding, so to speak, on their own. It's not on their own, of course, it says in the pasuk, but on their own in the sense that nobody announced it before them. So what does it mean earlier when it says v'dibru ashoturim and they make the three announcements? That must be the pasuk is implying that the Meshuach Mochama had also said these words and the shoturim are repeating them. Okay, so what do we mean? How does it work? Koyin medaber v'shoturim mashmiah. So the Kohen says these things. He says, whoever planted a vineyard, etc., goes home. And then the Shoturim re-announce them out loud that everybody should hear. So the Gemara says, Toni Chod, a Kohen Medaber, a Shoturim Ashmiya. Now we have one Braisa that says that the Kohen speaks and the Shoturim, in plural, announce it in public to everybody. V'tani Ida Kohen Medaber, a Kohen Mashmiya. A second Braisa says, that the Kohen speaks and the Kohen is the one who makes it heard. Now that could mean that one Kohen speaks and other Kohenim help announce it on his behalf, or it could mean all the same Kohen, that he says it to begin with out loud for everybody to hear. The Be'er Sheva versus the Rashash talk about the possibilities over there. Does it mean a different Kohen or the same Kohen? Anyway, but Tanya Idach, and then you have a third Braisa, Shoter Medaber, of a Shoter Mashmiah, that a Shoter makes the announcement and a Shoter makes it, that everybody hears it, where again, it could be the same Shoter or a different Shoter or a different Shoter, depending on depending how you learn. Anyway, so what is it? So who makes the announcement first? So Omar Abaya, okay, so Abaya says, to understand the three braises, it means like this. There's different parts of the announcement. Mi v'nigash ad v'dibru, from the part where it says that the Kohen approaches and says to the people, and he says to them the speech that was in the previous Mishnah, Shema Yisrael atem krev mayem l'mochama alei veichem. From there until the end of that speech, that Hashem is going with you, lo shiastem, so that we're then the next pasuk is v'dibru. So there, Kohen medaber, v'kohen mashmiya. That part is all said by the Kohen, and the shoturim don't get involved. The Kohen says it, and the Kohen announces it. The same Kohen, a different Kohen, whatever. Mi v'dibru ad v'yosfu. Then from the v'dibru ashoturim until v'yosfu, which is the three psukim that talk about the people who planted a vineyard or built a house or married a wife. So those, koyin medaber v'shoturim ashmiya. The koyin speaks the words and then the shoter announces them publicly that everybody should hear them, which is also what the Mishnah meant when it said shomim divrei koyin me'erchem elchama, because the koyin is the first one who says it and then the shoter just repeat it out up to the army after him. Then the last part where it says that the shoftim increase and they add and they say to the people about mia yore v'rachalevav, that part shoter medaber v'shoter mashmiya, that part the shoter announces and the shoter says it and the shoter announces it. So again, it can mean the same shoter or a different shoter, but there, in other words, that last part, the koyin is not involved at all. Okay, so that's how the three braises are reconciled. There's an idea behind it. I mean, the first one is he's telling them to be encouraged, to trust in Hashem. So therefore, it's only appropriate that a Kohen, which is the spiritual leader of the Jewish people, should be saying that. The next part is more practical things. And the last part, which includes people who are fearful and people who have Averis or whatever. So therefore, that's not really the Kohen's, that's not really the Kohen's bailiwick. So therefore, that's up to the Shoturim. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Miho Isha Shebanu Bayis Chodesh V'Gomer, Chola. And we said in the case of a house, so who is the man who built a new house? And we said in the Mishnah, it doesn't just mean a house. It can also mean a building for animals or for storage or what have you. And we also said that it applies whether he built the house himself or whether he bought it or yarshin it or whatever. So Tonan Abana, we're going to Braisa. Let's talk about the details. But Asher Bona, when it says that he built, Ein li Ela Asher Bona. we would only know from that it means literally if he built it. Lokach v'yorash v'nitan leim matanim inayin. How we know the same thing applies if he built it or yarshin it or was given it as a present. Because the pasuk says, who is the man who built a house? Now Rashi explains, if it just meant that he built it, then it would have said, that a house he built. So when it only says asher bana, then we can understand as though like we detach the word bias from it, and we say asher bana, that he asher bana means that he built mikol makom. So it says first because it says mi ha'ish, it could have said mi asher bana. So mi ha'ish means who is the man, meaning as long as he has a new house. So mi ha'ish asher bana bayis, ein le'ala bayis, and you would only know that it means an actual house. Minayin l'rabbis beis ha'keva and beis ha'boker or beis ha'etzim or beis ha'otzus. How do we know that it includes also, as we said, a stable or a place for straw or wood or other kinds of storage? The fact is, you could live in them, but they're not really meant for living in. I punctuated the Gemara a little bit wrong. Actually, it's supposed to be that first. How do we know that if it was given as a present or bought it or whatever? Talmud Lamed Mi Ha'ish. Therefore, it says who is the man. So in other words, we're darshaning from the fact that it says who is the man, where it could just said Mi Asher Bana. So Ha'ish is a ribui. So it includes anybody also who bought one or yarshin it, etc. And then when it says Asher Bana Bayis, that he built a house, Ein Le'ala Bayis, we'd only know from that a house. Minayin L'Rabbis Beis HaTevin, Beis HaBakar, Beis HaEitzim, Beis HaOitzus. Talmud Lamed Asher Bana Mikol Mokom. Therefore, the pasuk says that he built. Regardless, meaning, in other words, that if the pasuk meant only if he built an actual house that he's going to live in, then it would have said asher bayis bana, that a house he built. Now that it says asher bana bayis, so in effect, the pasuk is hinting to us asher bana, that he built a building regardless. And the building has to be bayis, it has to be at least something that's suitable for living in. You could conceivably live in a building that's meant for storing straw, that's meant for storing straw or wood or what have you. So it includes that mikol makom. So it includes it regardless. Then you would think that it includes even the person who builds a gatehouse or an entryway or a gallery, like we said. And we said in the Mishnah that he's not exempt. Talmud Lamed bias. Therefore, the pasuk is bias, implying my bias aroy ladira af kol aroy ladira. So therefore, it means just like a house is something that you could live in. The same thing, it has to be something that you could live in. You can't live in a base shar. Or an achsadra or a merpesis, because you have no privacy. People are constantly going back and forth through. So therefore, those are not considered bias. But you could have, as long as it is an enclosed structure that people don't walk through. So even if it's a straw, even if it's a house for straw or for animals or what have you, then it's still considered a bias for this purpose. On the other hand, the Braisa continues, Rabbi Lezim and Yaakov are bias from Ashmai. Rabbi Lezim and Yaakov says, no, it means exactly a house. So he disagrees with the whole thing that we said in the Mishnah, that it, and then the Braisa, that would include a stable or a house for straw or whatever. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, no, he's exempt only if he built an actual house to live in. Okay. We said, now the pasuk continues, they built a house, v'loi chanochoi, and he didn't inaugurate it. Now, it could have just said v'loi chanoch. It said, could have said v'loi chanoch. Instead, it says v'loi chanochoi. Therefore, prat l'gazlan. So therefore, that's a mute. It means not if he stole a house. If he stole a house, then he doesn't get to go home from the war for it. So the Gemara asks, Lema delaykir ab yesaglidi. That last point, do we have to say then that this braisa is not like Rabbi Yosiaglidi? De'ir Rabbi Yosiaglidi, ha'omar, Rabbi Yosiaglidi says at the end of our perek, the rach ha'lev of zehamis yadim ha'averes shibiyadei. He says that the last announcement that the shoter makes, that anybody who's faint or who's faint-hearted and fearful should go home, Rabbi Yossi says it doesn't just mean anybody who's afraid of fighting, because then everybody's in the Pashtos, he says, because then everybody's going to say, I'm afraid, and there's not going to be an army. He says it means somebody who's afraid because he did Averis, and he thinks then, and figures therefore, that Hashem is not going to, he's not going to be Zoicha to Hashem's protection. So now, a person who steals obviously has done an Avera. So if we're saying that he's potter only because of the miut from Asher Chanochai, that wouldn't be like Rabbi Yossi, because according to Rabbi Yossi, you should say he's potter anyway because he's Yorei V'Rach Aleva. The Gemara says, no, afilo tamer of Yesi Aglidi. No, you could say that the Braisa goes according to Rabbi Yesi Aglidi as well, because going to over Shuvah and Yohab Domi. You could say the case is that he did Shuvah and paid back the person he stole the house from. So then he's not, so he doesn't have a Verus Shuvah Yodah anymore because he did Shuvah. Nonetheless, the fact is the house that he has, he got in a way that was stealing. So the Gemara says, Yehochi Havali Lekeach. So what's the problem? In that case, it means that he bought the house. So therefore, we already said in the Mishnah that a person who buys a house is potter. The answer is given to me ikrib teres zela also the yade, because to begin with he got it in an illegal way by stealing it. Loi, so therefore he doesn't get the exemption, even though afterwards he did shuva and paid for it. But still, the braisa could go according to Rabbi Yosi Aglili as well, because in fact we're talking about that he doesn't have the avera anymore because he did pay the guy for it. Next, we said in the Mishnah, Miho Isha Shanota Kerem Chola. We said there's the man who planted a vineyard. And again, we said in the Mishnah, it doesn't just mean a vineyard, it means other kinds of trees as well, as long as there are at least five of them. And we said they have to be fruit trees. And again, we said it doesn't mean that he dafka planted. It could also be that he bought them, or it could be that he layered or grafted or whatever. So let's talk about that. Tonon Abonon. When it says a Shanota, that he planted, So ainli ela nota. So from that, you would only know it means if he actually planted it himself. Lokach the yorash v'nitzel le'matana. What if he bought it or yarshin it or was given it as a gift? Minayin. How do we know that he's also potter? Tamad lima umi ha'ish. Therefore, again, the pasuk says umi ha'ish, and like we had before, the word umi ha'ish is a ribui. It means any. It means the man. Otherwise, it didn't have to say the word ish at all. It could just say mi asher nota kerem. So therefore, that teaches us that it means also these cases. When it says asher not a kerem, it says he planted a vineyard. So ainli ella kerem. So you would only know from that an actual vineyard. Minayin l'rabas chamisha ilonim Michael. How do we know to include any kind of five fruit trees? V'afilu mishan minin, even if there were other species of fruit trees. Tamadloim asher nota. Therefore, the pasuk says asher nota. And again, it says asher nota before the word kerem, rather than saying asher kerem nota, which would imply that it's dafka, yes, they planted a vineyard. It says asher nota and then kerem. Again, like before with the house, it implies that he planted, no matter what kind of planting it was. And one example would be kerem. So then in that case, so what are we learning from the word kerem? Yochol shani marbe hanitei aboni aboi lani meichel b'chamishi lani srak. So you would think that in that case, maybe it includes also someone who planted only four fruit trees, or he planted five non-fruit bearing trees. How do we know that not? So Talmud Lema, kerem, therefore, that is why the pasuk mentions the word kerem, where we have, that's a miut, it has to be at least something similar to a kerem. So again, therefore, the minimum kerem in halacha, the minimum vineyard is five vines. And again, according to Rashi, they have to be in the configuration that he showed on Amud Aleph. So therefore it has to be at least five, and they have to be fruit bearing trees, just like vines are fruit bearing. So the pasuk is memayit the four regular trees, or the four fruit trees, or the five non-fruit bearing trees with the word kerem. Again, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, kerem k'mashmoy. Again, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov disagrees and says kerem means exactly what it sounds like. There's no ribui for other kinds of trees, only if he planted a vineyard. Then the pasuk had continued v'loy chila loy, and again it could have said loy chila leil. He didn't redeem the fruit. Instead, it says v'loy chila loy. He didn't redeem it. So therefore, the braisa says we learn from that prat l'mavrich u'lamarkiv. That comes to exclude somebody who just bent down a twig from it into the ground, or where he grafted. Now the Gemara is going to say, so what do you mean? We just said in the Mishnah the other way around. But the braisa is saying that we learn from the word loy chila loy, that we're exempting that kind of case. So the Gemara asks, "V'hanan tnan echad anitei v'echad amavrich v'echad amarkiv." We said in the Mishnah that if a person bends down a twig and layers it into the ground, or he grafts a branch onto another tree, then yeah, he is chol. The Mishnah had said that he does get to go back. So what is the Braisa saying that he doesn't? So Omer Abzera, Omer Abchista, like Kasha, Kan Bahakovas Isser, Kan Bahakovas Heter. The Braisa is talking about where the grafting that he did is Osir. Namely, for example, he grafted a branch of one species onto a different species, which is creating Kalai Ilan. So So therefore, so he doesn't get to go. So the same way as we said before, that a person steals a house, then he doesn't get to go home from the army. The same way over here, where he did a grafting, that's also, then also he doesn't get to go home. The Kesef Mishnah adds the point that we don't need to say the case where he stole a vineyard, because we already said we stole a house. So therefore, automatically we're including that as well. And again, you could also have, you know, before we said in that case, wouldn't he anyway be potter because of the Aveira? But the obvious answer is because here you don't need to, here all you need to do is to do tshuva. The fact is, once a tree has been grafted, even though you're not allowed to do it in the first place, you're allowed to keep that tree and you're even allowed to eat the fruit from it. So unlike with the house, where you have to go pay the guy for the house, here you don't have to. You did a grafting that was also, nevertheless, you don't really have to do anything to undo it. All you have to do is you just have to do tshuva. So the Braisa is talking about where he did it, where he did something that's osur, therefore he doesn't get an exemption from the army from it. Whereas Kan, Bar Kavas Hatter, the Mishnah is talking about where he grafted a branch from one tree onto another tree of the same species, which is perfectly mutter, therefore he gets to go home from the army for that. Now the Gemara didn't mention about the layering, about the mavrich, to make the distinction there. So of course, you know, one possibility, of course, is with Mavrich. Also, you can find cases where it's also where versus where it's mutter. But besides that, also Mefoshim talk about other possibilities, including that with the Mavrich, the Gemara knew that there's a very simple distinction between did the branch already detach from the parent plant? So let's say it already developed roots, but did it detach from the parent plant and it's starting to grow on its own, or did it not yet? So the Gemara understands that there's an easy enough distinction over there, and therefore it doesn't bother asking. Okay, so the Gemara says, "Hai hakovas heter hechidomi." Well, you have to ask, what's the scenario where you're saying that he did a hakova, where he did a grafting, which is mutter, and because of that, he gets to go home from the army? E lema yalda the yalda. Are we talking about that he took a branch from a young tree, which is still Urla, and grafted it onto another young tree, which is still Urla? Well, what's the chiddush? Typically, the boy meheder mishum yalda rishayna. Well, anyway, he's potter from going to the army because of the first tree. The first tree is still within its years of Arla. There's loy chilal. There's loy chilaloy yet. He wasn't yet mechalal the fruit of that tree because it's still also as Arla. So he's potter anyhow. It doesn't matter whether he grafted or not. So what happens if the trees, if one of them is in its second year and the other it's in its first year, fine. We're still going to say that the branch is going to be bottled to the tree that it's attached to. So we have to be talking about Yalda Biskena. Are we talking about that he took a branch from a young tree and grafted it onto an older tree, which is already past the years of Orla? So you're going to say that then he gets to go home, but how could you say that? Doesn't Rav Abahu say that if you took a branch from a young tree and you grafted it on, sibcha is another word for hakava, and you grafted a branch of it onto an older tree, butla yalda bizkena, then the young branch becomes bottle in the old tree because now it's attached to it and it's getting nourishment from it. The ein ba din orla, and then the din of orla no longer applies to the fruit of that young branch. So how could you say that it will be v'loy chiloloy at that point? It doesn't need chilol anymore. Doesn't need orla. Doesn't need neteravai. So what are we talking about? By the way, this is one of the sources for the concept that, for example, if they graft a branch from an esug tree onto a lemon tree, as they sometimes do, because lemon trees are stronger, then it's possible to use for the mitzvah of esrog. We get that one of the sources, all Gemara over here, because we're saying that the branch will be bottled to the parent tree, so therefore the fruit that grows on it won't be considered esrog anymore. Anyway. So Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, la'olam yalda b'yalda. In fact, we are talking about that a branch from a young tree was taken and grafted onto another young tree. So you're going to say, well, in that case, he's potter because of the first young tree anyway. What does it matter whether he grafted or not? Because you could say, because the scenario could be where he planted the first tree not for the purpose of fruit, but rather he planted it as a hedge around his property, or he planted it in order to get beams of wood from it. Ditznan, as in fact we learn in the first Mishnah of Masechta Orla, and the tail of Siogalakotis, if a person plants a tree intending that it should be as a fence or that he's going to take wood, that he's going to cut off branches from it and use them for wood. So even though it's growing fruit, he didn't plant it for the purpose of the fruit. So even though the fruit is edible, nevertheless, potter min ha'orla, it's still potter from orla because he didn't plant it for the purpose of a fruit tree in the first place. So you could have the scenario then. So he planted the first tree for one of these purposes, l'siyog l'kardes. So therefore, the fruit of it is not chayiv in orla. Now he took a branch from a different tree and he grafted it onto this one. And now the clock starts for this one. Now you have orla and netzer d'vayi. You're going to apply to it, and therefore we're saying that he's potter. Well, the question is, well, then why is it we said before that if you take a branch from a new tree and graft it onto an old tree, we said it's bottle, and therefore the branch no longer has the dinim of Orla applied to it? Why are you saying that now? Both of them are young trees, and you're attaching a branch to it. Why are we saying it's not bottle? Why are we saying that the new branch still has the dinim of Orla? Why shouldn't it be bottle? And we should say now the entire tree is there, l'siyog l'kardes, and therefore the whole thing should be potter. The answer is hosam, because the difference is when it comes to grafting from new onto old, let's say he changes his mind. Doesn't matter. The tree that he grafted into is already old. Lav bas mehadur. There's no changing it. There's no turning back the clock and making that the old tree is going to be Orla and revai again, because it doesn't work that way. Once 4 years have passed, then that's it. All of that stage in the tree's life is over. Hocha, whereas over here, in the case where he planted a tree intending to use it as a fence or for beams, if later on he changes his mind, then he is able to, his changing his mind does have an effect on halacha, and then the dinim of Orla and Netzer d'Vayi kick in. After all, this fruit, this tree did originally exist for the fruit. It is a fruit-bearing species. You just personally planted it for siyog or for kodesh. So therefore, you now thinking differently and saying, you know what, forget about siyog and kodesh. I'm going to actually use this as a fruit tree. That allows the orla clock to start. Because in that case, it's similar to a case of trees that started growing on their own. As the next Mishnah there in the Sechta Orla says, if trees start growing on their own, so you didn't plant them, but a seed fell onto the ground and it started growing on its own, chayavim ba'orla. And then those trees are chayiv in orla, because even though you didn't plant it, it exists over there, and you're going to end up using the fruit of it, and therefore it's chayiv in orla. So by the same token, if a person planted a tree for siyog or for kodesh, it is possible for him to change his mind and decide that instead he plans to use it mainly for peiros, and then the orla clock starts. So therefore, even if he grafted a young branch onto it, we don't say the young branch is bottle on the old tree. Even before he changed his mind, we said that we say the new branch already is chayiv in orla. And therefore, we're saying that now, the Mishnah was saying, as long as they were the same species and there's no issue in that grafting, then he's potter from going to the army on the grounds of that. The idea being basically the Mephoshim talk about that when you graft the young branch onto the old tree, so you have what's called zevzeh goden. You have the fruit that's growing on that young branch comes from the young branch itself, which should be subject to orla. And then on the other hand, it's also growing from the old tree, which is potter already from orla, because that time in its life is already over. So therefore, it's an example of zevzeh goden, and therefore it's mutter. And then you also have the point that in turn itself is a form of bittul, which is why the Gemara used the expression that it's bottle. So the Gemara says, so the Gemara asks, why do we need to go to such a doichak in order to answer the question about, again, where the Mishnah had said that if a person grafts a branch, then he's potter from the army, and the Braisa had said that still he's chayev. Why do we need to be talking about that we're saying that he planted the original tree for a fence, and now he grafted a branch onto it, and then we're talking about whether he changes his mind or whatever. So why do we need that? V'loikma b'kerem shal shnei shutfin. Why don't we do it more straightforwardly? Let's explain that we're talking about a vineyard that's owned jointly by two partners. So one of them, so in other words, you have one of them owns the tree. That's it. One of them owns the tree. The other one owns a different tree. And so Reuven owns a tree, and Shimon takes a branch from his own tree and grafts it onto Reuven's tree. So now they're partners in whatever grows from it, because the branch belongs to Shimon and the tree belongs to Reuven. So why don't you say, then, very simple. We're talking about they're both young trees. Reuven is Potter, because he has five young trees that are before the time of Neter Avai, and Shimon is Potter, because of the branch that he grafted. So each one gets an exemption from the army because of his own part. Why didn't we say it that way? Why do we have to have this doichik of talking about that it's all one owner and that the tree was planted for a different purpose, and then you're grafting a branch onto it? So Amar Papa. So the Papa says, Zois Emeris. You see from that, Kedem Shoshne Shutvin, Ein Chosvin Olav Me'erchem Mochama. You see from that, in fact, that if you have a vineyard that's owned jointly by two partners, they don't get an exemption from the army for it. So therefore, the Gemara wasn't able to use that as an answer. Tosfos Shantz points out, the question was not really so much on the Braisa. The Braisa could have explained that way. But in the Yeshiva, among the Chachmei Yeshiva, among the Amiroim, where they were discussing this Braisa, and we said the only way to make it work is we planted the Siyog L'Kodesh, is because they're saying that a vineyard that belongs to two partners is not in fact exempt them from the army. So the Gemara asks, Maishna Mechamisha Achan Mes Echad Ben Mochama. So what's the difference that we say further on in the Gemara that if you have five brothers and one of them died in the war, in the battle, and he didn't have children, so now his wife is up for Yibum, and Dekulan Chozrin, and the din is all the other brothers get to return home from the army because any one of them could do Yibum. So why don't we say, so even though obviously only one of them is going to do Yibum, nevertheless, they're all Potter. So why don't we say the same thing then when two people own a vineyard jointly? And the answer is, the difference is that each one of them, eventually, she's going to become his wife. When she becomes his, whichever one of them does Yibum, she's going to be his wife exclusively. He's not going to be sharing her with the rest of them. Therefore, so we can still say that the word Ishtoi applies. Hocha, but here we have a vineyard that belongs to two partners. We can't say on any one of them, Karmoi, his vineyard. So because each vine belongs to both of them. So therefore we can't say that in that case, therefore we can't explain the Braisa talking about a case where one person owns the trunk of the parent tree and the other one owns the branch that's grafted into it, because in fact in that case it's not karmoi for any one of them individually, because each one of them owns they have joint ownership. Therefore, in fact, they would be chayav to serve in the army. Okay. Now, going back to the question of why, again, we were discussing the question of if he's markiv, then anyway, so what's the scenario? Again, either the branch is bottled to the tree that he's markiv into, or if both of them are young trees, then he's potter on the grounds of the first one. So far, we had given the answer, Reb Yirmiya had given the answer that the first one was planted, the siyog l'kodesh. So now, Reb Nachman Yitzchok gives a different answer. B'mavrich ilan b'yer. What we're talking about over here is the person grafts a branch of a tree onto a yerek. Now, yerek basically means vegetables, but it means anything that's not considered a tree in halacha. You have similar to the way you have in Hilchos Brachos, you have a distinction between a tree and a bush, where certain kinds of bushes, then the general rule is, do the branches last from year to year, and then things like that. Anyway, so in the same thing, you have as far as these dinim, you have a similar distinction between trees and yerek, which is vegetables or bushes or whatever. So now you could have that he grafted a branch of a tree onto a yerek. So now Orla doesn't apply to yerek. On the other hand, Marsha adds the point that it's not going to be bottle, because you can't say that it's going to be bottle when it's a different min. So therefore, there you have an example where he's potter because of the harkava, because of the grafting, even though he wouldn't have been potter to begin with because of the planting, because when he planted vegetables, that didn't make him potter from the army. You're going to say it's osir. V'hai tana who, the braisa that was saying, or the Mishnah rather, that saying that Mavrich would be potter, that the the Mishnah would be going according to the following Tanya. The Tanya we learn in a Braisa. Hamavrich ilan b'yerek. If a person does that, he grafts a branch of a tree onto a yerek. Reb Shimon Gamliel matur mishum Reb Yehuda ben Gamda ish kvar akor. Reb Shimon Gamliel quoting Reb Yehuda ben Gamda from kvar akor, he says it's mutter. V'cham oisur, and the Chum say it's oser. So therefore, so according to Reb Shimon Gamliel, now the halacha is like the chachamim, but nevertheless, you could still find according to Reb Shimon Gamliel, it would be possible to do it without it being an iser. And therefore, there is our answer. Therefore, Reb Nachman Yitzchok says, there is our answer. There is another example where the planting didn't make him potter from the army, but the grafting does, because now the grafting is, because now you have the branch is starting to regrow on the new bush or whatever it is that it's attached to. Udiyu, by the way, Tosfos point, and then not Tosfos, Marsho, Udiyu points out, by the way, when we were saying that if he does, that if he grafts onto a different species, wouldn't it be an Isser? The Marsho says also, you know, the fact is, it could be he himself didn't do it. Maybe his sharecropper, whoever was working his fields, did that. Therefore, the Gemara didn't ask about a Averus Shabiyadah. But anyway, he was saying that we can even have a case where it's Mutter. And then another one, Ki Osir of Dimi, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, Omar, he says, Omar Rabbi Yechanan, then he said in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, another possibility. Hamani Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. We could say that Braisa that says that he doesn't get to return from the army because of the grafting would be according specifically according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Loy Omar Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Hosam Kerem Kamashmoy. After all, didn't Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov say in that Braisa that the word Kerem means exactly that, a vineyard? It does not include any other kinds of trees. Hochanami, Nota Kamashmoy, the same way, Nota can mean exactly what it sounds like. Neteya Ein, Mavrichamakiv Loy, only when he actually plants, not when he layers or not when he grafts. So then he would say, that he doesn't get to return from the army because of that. But the Mishnah could be the Tana of the Mishnah would be disagreeing and saying that he would still be exempt. So altogether, we have three different answers. We have Rabbi Yumi's answer to reconcile the Mishnah and the Braisa. We have Rabbi Yumi's answer that we're talking about that he took a branch from a young tree and grafted it to another young tree where the first young tree was planted only for siyog or kodesh, and therefore it's not subject to Urla. You have the second answer, which is that we're talking about that he attached a branch of a tree to a yerek, where again yerek is not subject to Urla. And then you have the third answer over here that in fact it's machlokas tanoim. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov would say he's chayev to serve in the army, and the chachamim would say he's potter. Okay. To be continued tomorrow.